I'm Dorothy Wickenden. On today's Politics and More podcast, David Remnick talks with New Yorker staff writer Nicholas Lemon. They'll discuss the future of Trumpism and whether the Republican Party will redefine itself once Trump is out of office.
Nicholas Lemon has been reporting on and studying American politics for a long time as a staff writer for The New Yorker. And now as this strange and very unnerving election season draws to a close, with the polls forecasting real trouble for Donald Trump, Nick has been considering a question that could be crucial to the American future. Will Trumpism outlast Donald Trump? Nick, let's begin with a very basic question. What is Trumpism?
Well, it's a little hard to answer because President Trump is such an erratic person. But it would have been easier to answer during the Republican primary season in 2016. So then you had the spectacle of Trump, in addition to being a super flamboyant and flamboyantly offensive former reality TV star, it wasn't clear that he even was a Republican and he was running for president. And he quickly carved out a sort of zone for himself, not just a personality zone, but a set of political stances that were really different from what you expected in a Republican. You know, pro-labor, pro-social security, no anti-government, I'm getting government out of your life, I'm limiting government, none of that kind of rhetoric, nativist, nationalist, racist, and somewhat anti-business. A lot of anti-elite, but a lot of Wall Street bashing. So he was, you know, pitching himself to a certain kind of voter that wasn't in the Republican playbook.
Now, you say that Karl Rove told you, the Republican strategist who was so closely associated with George W. Bush, said by the time you got to 2016, people just wanted to throw a brick through a plate glass window. What does that mean?
Well, I think it means, and, you know, I want to say this is a Democratic and Republican phenomenon, and it's a global phenomenon. It's not just about Trump. It's not just about the Republicans. It's not just about the U.S., people, well, let's go back. The turn of the millennium, there was this thing called the Washington Consensus, which you can find in, say, Tom Friedman's book. He has this phrase, the golden straitjacket, and he says everybody in the world just has to accept certain things, free trade, et cetera, and outsourcing of blue-collar jobs. A lot of people accepted that and thought, okay, fine, that's it. Both parties essentially agree on this. It became clear, especially after the 2008 financial crisis, that that view was just wrong. In terms of blue-collar workers, it was, you know, my job just went to China or wherever, or Mexico, so I feel abandoned and lied to. Then I think you and I both know a few people who are younger than ourselves. For them, the attitude is this whole narrative about the American dream, that was just never true for a generation or two, hasn't been true. And that's not just why Trump happened, it's why Bernie happened, who seemed through two presidential election cycles just as unlikely as a political star as Trump.
Now, you say that Trump came along and exposed the inner hollowness of the Republican Party, quoting from the conservative Charles Kessler. What does that mean?
So the U.S. has had the same two dominant parties since 1860. And that's weird. It's a long run. Many times the run of either or both parties has been predicted to end, but they haven't ended. So each party has to be, if we have only two in a big, diverse country like this, a sort of bizarre coalition of people who don't have that much in common. The Republican coalition in recent years has been, to oversimplify, rich people and evangelical Christians. And, you know, the hollowness is they don't have anything in common. It sounds facile to say it, but it's true. The rich donor class in the Republican Party is not filled with people who think abortion is murder and things like that. and who go to church several times a week. And the evangelicals don't believe in, quote, neoliberalism. You know, Trump exploited that lack of commonality between the two sides of the Republican Party.
Yes, and in the campaign, recognized that evangelicals account for, in terms of people who identify as evangelical Christians, something like 80 million people.
Yeah, it's the huge majority of the Republican Party. It's the Republican base.
But he campaigned appealing to them. He campaigned as a populist. But as president, it turns out that he governed more conventionally as a conservative.
Right.
Tax cuts for corporations, conservative judges, law and order, and all the rest. Why did that happen?
Okay, so first you have to separate sort of the Trump show and what Trump actually did in the policy sense while Trump was president, and you're not allowed to talk about tweets and things like that. A massive tax cut, massive rollback of government regulations, and, you know, it's sort of a Reaganite policy, but way more than Reagan even dared to ask for, especially in terms of corporate tax cuts and rolling back environmental regulations, financial regulations. In the aggregate, these weren't to benefit the people who brought him into the Republican nomination and then into office. These weren't policies that helped all those, you know, displaced factory workers in the upper Midwest who really tipped the balance in the election. So then, back to your question, so why did he do this? And, you know, to do this piece, I talked to a lot of Republicans, and for them at least, you know, one might hear the answer, well, that's just because these rich Republicans control the party. I want to give a little more subtle answer than that. I don't think they control the party still electorally, but I do think they control the party in the sense that they have this huge apparatus they've built up over the years that has produced all of these people who are just waiting for a Republican to take office so they can serve in it. And Trumpism didn't have that. So he, combination of his personal lack of interest in the details of government and policy and the fact that the establishment that he spurned was able to say, we'll supply all your appointees and all your policies, that he just went with that.
So now we come to the crux of the matter. We're looking at polls. We're not going to predict anything because that's a fool's game, and we've been through that before. Nevertheless, the polls indicate that Donald Trump is in serious trouble, that his odds of winning are, let's just say, less than half. So you say that there are essentially three scenarios of post-Trump, that there is a remnant scenario for the Republican Party, a restoration scenario, and a reversal scenario. What do you mean?
Okay, so these are my categories, the names I have given what I'm hearing from talking to a whole bunch of Republicans and conservatives. Remnant is the idea of Trumpists are a surrounded and shrinking and older minority, but by God, they're going to keep fighting, and they're just going to stay as much like Trump as possible and not try to be inclusive in any way. You know, if you want to look at Twitter and not look at Donald Trump's Twitter, look at Donald Trump Jr.'s Twitter or Senator Josh Hawley's Twitter. So that's remnant. Restoration would be the Republican Party wakes up as if after a bad dream, and the party can go back to its traditional role as the party of business, which it's been for at least 100 years. You know, tax cuts, free enterprise, strong military, the basic Reagan mix.
And the embodiment of this is somebody like Nikki Haley.
Yeah, I mean, you could envision somebody who would be sort of in line, like Pence or Pompeo, or Nikki Haley is thought to be running, but positioning herself as, you know, the bearer of the Reagan tradition, the pro-business, optimist Republican. And it would be as if Trump never happened. The reversal is a kind of flipping of the historic roles of the two parties so that the Republican Party becomes more the sort of lower middle class labor, at least non-public employee labor union party. It begins to attract a lot of Latinos, and it's kind of the party of the people. And the Democrats become the party of business, particularly, you know, high tech and financial businesses.
And the embodiment of this is Marco Rubio somehow, who talks to you at length.
Yeah. So let me say, I want to stress how, if this happened, first, how close it is to happening and how weird it would be. It's not just in the U.S., but globally in the 20th century, politics kind of came down to, in democracies that were developed, there'd be a party of labor and a party of business, basically. You find this all over the world. So for those roles to switch would be a big deal. The 10 richest congressional districts in the U.S., all 10 are represented by Democrats. 44 of the 50 richest are represented by Democrats. The biggest business sector in the country, tech, is clearly affiliated with the Democrats and is getting bashed by Republicans all the time. Wall Street is not as uniformly Republican as it always was, and in some campaigns has been majority Democratic. And the Democrats dominate among college-educated voters, which is not the historical situation. So somebody like Rubio thinks, I can build a Republican Party that has a more sort of open, inclusive, less negative rhetoric. It's very focused on the middle part of the country. This new kind of Republican would reach out to the less populated areas and say, you know, if you are just a regular church-going person who lives a local life, wants a job, and wants a party that cares about you, we're your party.
And what is the likeliest outcome of these three scenarios for the Republican Party? What do you see as the likeliest outcome and why?
If I had to bet, I would bet that the Republicans will go with the restoration scenario, which probably isn't the smartest one for them. But that's just because the whole office holder and leadership part of the party is so trained in that and steeped in that for decades. And I think it's very easy to go back to the mistakes of 2016.
Yeah, but what happens to the vaunted base? This is tens of millions of people, not just people who come out to Trump rallies, but people who have stayed with him despite everything, despite Twitter, despite things that they find offensive or rude or misogynist or racist. Obviously, there are many who find that attractive.
If the Republicans go with restoration, I think the Democrats, if they're smart, will go after some of the Trump voters, remembering, you know, that many of them voted for Obama. You know, when Dr. King made his great speech in 1965, he said, essentially, the reason that poor whites in the South are racist is they've been distracted away from their true economic interests. And that was said in a spirit of optimism that they could be brought back to attend to their true economic interests. So I think the Democratic Party, if they attend to the economic interests, which they haven't done so well for the last 20 years, could lure back a lot of people who voted for Trump. And it's not useful to say, those people are just racist, forget about it. I think people have good and bad in them.
Nick, in closing, I can't help but ask, we've been discussing, is there Trumpism after Trump? What is for Trump after this? What do you think, what is the afterlife of Donald Trump if in fact he loses this election?
Wow. Well, every morning and every night I walk my dog and I talk to my neighbors. Not one believes that Trump will voluntarily leave office. So that's one scenario, is he will declare martial law and just remain our president for the rest of his natural life.
Which you see as a reasonable scenario? Do you think it's possible? No.
I hope it's not possible, and I don't think it's. When I argue with these people, I say, you know, the folks who have brought that off, they have, like, for instance, the uniformed military on their side, like Sisi in Egypt. And he doesn't seem to have that. So I guess what he would do is he seems not to be a shy retiring type and isn't going to, you know, go home and paint oil paintings of his feet like George W. Bush has. He'll find a way to remain in the spotlight, maybe dream of a restoration of Trumpism. I can't imagine we've seen the last of him.
Nicholas Lemon, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Nicholas Lemon is a professor of journalism at Columbia and a staff writer for many years at The New Yorker. And you can find his essay about the Republican Party after Trump at newyorker.com.